Blog Talk Radio.
And we are on the air with Let's Talk TV Live. I am your host, Barbara Barnett. I'm executive editor of Blog Critics Magazine, where I also serve as the senior TV and film editor. And I'm also the proprietress of Let's Talk TV blog at letstalktv.barbarabarnett.com. And I have with me tonight Jerome Wetzel TV, Jimmy, who writes for Blog Critics and Seat42F and various and the TV King. Have I got them all right now, Jimmy?
Yes, those are the three big ones.
The three big ones, but of course I like to read him on Blog Critics because that's where I'm his boss.
True.
And we are also joined tonight by Chrissy, our heart Chrissy, who also writes for Blog Critics, but has her own Blog Talk Radio show, shows, plural.
Yes, shows. Quite a craziness.
And Chrissy writes a lot of daytime stuff, keeps us all up to date on the general hospital beat on Blog Critics, which is cool.
Yes, hi everyone.
And we're going to talk about, my phone is ringing. That's bizarre. It's ready for the show.
they're calling the wrong number, right?
That's never happened to me before. They're calling the wrong number. Whoa, that's so weird. Okay, we're just going to end that. So anyway, before we get started talking about Once Upon a Time, which we're going to talk about, what a great episode, by the way. Did you guys like it?
Oh, absolutely.
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was good.
Ishtar said it's Jane calling back. Well, Jane does know my home phone number here in the studio, but she would be calling on the studio line and not on my private landline, which that was. So I don't think it was Jane. It could be.
Funny.
I don't think so. And no, actually, she doesn't have my landline. She does have my cell phone number, though. And that's how we communicated at Comic-Con last summer, by text message.
Oh, there you go. That's the best thing, too, for that type of situation.
it totally is. It totally is. And it's kind of nice that people trust me to have their personal phone numbers.
Yeah.
I don't give them out to anyone for any price.
Right.
Anyway, before we get into talking about Once Upon a Time, because I did say kind of and more, so I'm doing the and more. I am really excited because Game of Thrones is coming back on the air in a couple of weeks. Yay!
Yay!
For season 3. And I'm super, super excited because I've been invited to an HBO media event that is going to be this Thursday night here in Chicago. Yay!
That's going to be so much fun.
It is. There's going to be like a reception that's like from 5:30 to 7. And in the King Arthur, is it the King Arthur room? King Arthur room or the Round Table room? I don't know, this really classy hotel. And then at 7 o'clock, they're going to be screening the first episode of season 3. And they are encouraging everyone to come in costume. So
that
in,
is so cool.
In medieval costume. So I actually have a medieval dress, which I bought.
Very cool.
It's in forest green to make it sort of, you know, a little bit of the forest, about a little of the forest, a little Once Upon a Time-y. But yeah, so I'm really excited. I have short hair, so that's not going to work as well. But yeah, I'm really excited about that. So I will report on that next week. I am really, really super excited.
I can't wait to read your articles and stuff. That's going to be very cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if there are actually going to be people from the cast there. I kind of hope there are.
Fingers crossed.
And I don't know if they're doing this in other cities. I know they had some sort of event at the University of Texas in Austin, or they're having it start, I think it's Wednesday, but it was for university students in that department and part of South by Southwest and all of that, because that's where South by Southwest is. But I don't know if they're having anything other than the thing in Chicago. There's been nothing on the internet about it. So I feel real privileged to be invited as a member of the media, and I will report on it next week. So very excited about it. I'm a huge fan of the show. I'm actually As much as I don't like the character because he's kind of stodgy, I really kind of like the actor who plays Stannis Baratheon. I'm a huge fan of Stephen Lane's and have really enjoyed all of his work, and kind of fun seeing him in Game of Thrones. So one of these days we'll do a 6 degrees of separation with it, because there are 6 degrees of separation with many of my favorite actors, including Carlisle. And here's a trivia question for you guys. Okay. Game of Thrones, 6 degrees of separation question. How does Robert Carlyle connect to Game of Thrones?
I have no idea.
He would play.
I know there's going to be a clever way to this. I have no idea.
Even though he's not in it, he would make an amazing Mance Rayder, but he did it because of his commitment to Once Upon a Time. And by the way, guys, did you hear that there's going to be a Trainspotting sequel?
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that?
I did.
No, I didn't.
The original cast.
What is it?
Yeah.
Danny Boyle is apparently, this is what I read in Variety, guys, that Danny Boyle is going to be making Irvine Welsh's sequel. The sequel to the book is called Porno, and it takes place like 20 years post Trainspotting.
Ooh,
and the timing is good. And I know one of the big hang-ups with having done a sequel to Trainspotting was a rift between Danny Boyle and Ewan McGregor.
Right.
And apparently that has all been ironed out from what I'm hearing. So very, very excited.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I think it's slated to happen in like 2016. So it's going to be a couple years. And the other thing is I heard that Ewan McGregor and Carlisle are collaborating on a brand new project.
Oh, yay. Oh,
which
my God.
They're going to star in together, and Carlisle is going to direct. So
that would
be
awesome.
Much more, you know, much sooner. Anyway, so that's kind of like my little newsy stuff. So let's get to Game of Thrones. Ha! Let's get to Once Upon a Time. So what do you guys think of the episode?
Wonderful, Lana Parilla.
Wonderful
Regina episode.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I think she did such a fantastic job with the emotional.
The parallels between the two stories. When I was writing my review of the episode, you couldn't really separate the past and the present.
That's funny, because when I was writing my review, I had the same thing. I kind of went back and forth. Usually I will, it is Perea.
Yeah,
I've spoken with her on the phone, and yes, it is Perea. I had a very hard time separating the two as well. And you really can't, because they are really, bookends of the same story. Where do we start? Oh, I want to start with the teaser. Because that teaser looked like it was plucked right out of the X-Files to me.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we were just talking earlier. Yeah, I mean, it felt like it was some kind of crazy alien something coming after them. You really could have thought that. It was so cool. I loved it. I loved that. They had that feel to it, you know. It was crazy.
It really did. I was waiting for, as you were saying, Mulder and Scully to pop up.
Yeah.
And John Piper Ferguson has been, like, become the go-to person for these sci-fi type shows recently. I mean, he did Caprica and the new Battlestar Galactica TV movie, and he did Alphas, and so it's like he fit right in there.
So wait a second.
Yeah,
was he in Caprica? What did he play in Caprica?
He was the businessman that was the rival to Grayson Industry.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
See, and I never watched Caprica, so I didn't know.
Oh, it was great. It was so good.
Really?
And he played a different character in the Battlestar Galactica prequel movie that just came out, which kind of annoyed me, but, you know, he was amazing.
Yeah, you know, John Ferguson actually was in an episode of The X-Files. Okay, guys.
Yes.
Trivia question number 2 for the night.
Yes.
what episode of The X-Files was John Piper Ferguson in?
Ha. No idea.
Huh?
No idea.
Does Jimmy know?
No, I haven't seen that much of The X-Files. I wish I had seen more, but...
Oh, my God. I'm like, I know every single episode of that. I mean, the entire season.
He was in the episode Emily, for those of you... I wouldn't keep you in suspense for too long. But that original trivia question still remains, the 6 degrees of separation thing. So Storybrooke isn't a real town. It's completely, completely fictional, completely created out of Regina's mind.
I never thought of it that way. I mean, I thought she just transported him to an existing town. I mean, I was surprised by that. It was interesting, especially when he's like, okay, the freeway should be over here. And then he's like, Dad.
Aged when the curse took place. I mean, it wasn't a brand new town they arrived in, which is interesting. And it was interesting that Regina, like, cloaked it at the end so the sheriffs couldn't see it, which might explain how they've kept the outsiders out all these years.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So wonder a little bit more how Ellen got back in.
Right. Right. Well,
go ahead.
What is it? We all want to talk, which is good. but what does it say that the way the town is? What does that say about Regina? What kind of town is in her mind?
That's the mind where everybody just bows to her. She controls everything, and I loved the scene when she walked into Gold's store. And he was like, she was surprised that he didn't remember anything at that point either.
Yeah, she kind of assumed.
Thought was very interesting. I'm like, oh my God. Like, it never, but then I loved the whole Groundhog Day aspect. I mean, every day is the day.
I kept thinking,
okay, is Bill Murray going to come out at any moment?
I know.
Maybe wore a different outfit in each.
She did. And I'm wondering, and I was trying to do that. I think she was tinkering with it. I don't think it was just that the town was the same day after day after day. She was tinkering with it because she wasn't happy. She wasn't happy with it. So, you know, she was like, well, this isn't quite right, and people are too happy, and people don't like me, so I'm going to tweak this. And then she woke up, and they still didn't. And that's when she was sort of complaining to Gold eventually that, this isn't the way it was supposed to be. This isn't what, this isn't the deal we made. And he's like, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Exactly.
But
it was
like, and it was very telling. He says, well, don't people respect you or whatever? And she says, well, but they're doing it because they're afraid of me.
They're doing it because they have to, not because they want to. That's a huge.
That's
what she said. It was because they have to, not because they want to. And there is a difference. I mean, she thought she'd be happy if everyone is just doing her bidding, but.
Right.
Definitely feels the hollowness, and she can tell the difference.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting. Someone in the chat room is saying, yeah, we got the real Mr. Gold, and who also pointed out to me that Adam and Eddie said in the podcast that he didn't get his memories back until Emma came to town, which is interesting because I had heard last year Robert Carlyle was interviewed, and that was his take. He doesn't get his memory back until he actually meets her, and that's the trigger.
And when the clock moves and life starts, a lot of things were triggered when Emma came to town.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know if, like, Gold had anything to do with getting Henry, though.
Well, he did. Oh, he absolutely did. It is canon that Gold procured for Regina Henry. We know that. Now, the question you're going to ask is, well, okay, if he doesn't remember.
Yeah, exactly.
How did that work? So I'm guessing that there is something something intrinsic to him, like a radar.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a, it's like, you know one of your own kind. Like I go around saying, oh, yeah, yeah, he's Jewish. Nah, he's not Jewish. She is. I mean, it's like,
right,
you know, you know, it's like, you know. I mean, you know, you're Italian, right?
Right, right.
You know, you know another Italian. You don't need to know their name.
Oh, yeah, you don't need to know. It's just, it's something that is innately in you. So you don't even, you just know it.
It's a radar.
Totally.
It's like a, you know, an internal radar. I don't know your ethnicity, Jimmy, so I couldn't.
Sort of German and Scottish, and yeah, I don't recognize other. We've been in America for so long.
And that's like sort of, you know, that's sort of normative America, sort of Western European, you know.
There you go.
Not like those of us with, you know, more ethnicity. Whatever that is. So we've got a really interesting town. But the town is boring. You know, it's a boring little town, isn't it? And very different than Fairy Tale Land. So
did you guys notice how the scenes, though, that we saw as it was opening are the same scenes that we saw from the first episode?
Yeah, right.
I thought that was really interesting, too. I mean, we knew that Henry was in the mix at that point.
So
everything pretty much stays the same except she gets the son, I guess.
So you know what? I wonder, though, that gets me to thinking about this Groundhog Day thing again.
Yeah.
Because you wonder if until Emma came into town and triggered the clock and triggered it all, if every day was the same.
For the most part,
Archie crossing the street, saying hello, Mary Margaret in the school, you know, and so
fixing the sign,
fixing the sign. I mean, everything is, with some very small variations, it is the same day that happens in Storybrooke every single day. And it's not until Emma hits the scene that she throws this big, huge monkey wrench into it. And I wonder if Henry's presence it as well.
There has to be some variance when Henry gets there. I mean, there has to be something to a certain extent. And then of course, you know, when Emma gets there, obviously. But yeah, it was just really interesting to me. I mean, it's the same. They do the same thing maybe every single morning. I think they do go through the same thing every day.
I did start to wonder. You know, obviously the adults don't age when the clock's frozen, and the children in town don't age. So what happens when Henry comes? Is he the only one that does age? It seemed like he was adopted very young, and not when he was the current age he is.
Right. Right.
And so doesn't he notice that the other kids didn't age as he did? I don't know. I feel like that's worth exploring.
They may do that. They may indeed do that. Because he's not of that town.
Maybe this is the age where he realized something was wrong, and then he got the storybook, and then it all unfolded from there.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like my novel where my immortal doesn't realize he's an immortal until he is in a huge catastrophe and doesn't die.
Oh, Lord.
Unbreakable.
He's like, what?
Unbreakable?
That's the worst
movie.
To know you're not.
Is that right?
Have you seen Unbreakable?
No.
It was an M. Night Shyamalan movie with Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson, and Bruce Willis is in a train wreck, and he escapes from the train wreck unscathed, and he's like, this is weird, and then he realizes he's never been sick in his life, and then it starts to clue into him.
Oh, wait a minute. What movie was it?
Unbreakable.
Oh, I did see that. Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that movie, actually.
Well, okay. So mine is a little different because it takes place in 1837, and there is a reason why he's immortal.
A little different.
So he's got a train wreck?
No. It actually, a train catastrophe happens, and he's a doctor, and it's 1837, and something falls on him, and he should have died, and he doesn't. But he's an accidental immortal. He's like, you know.
Wow.
He wasn't until something happened, and I can't say that.
Right.
I'm not going to get into my novel. But brain is completely there, though. I've been, like, working on it, like, 5 hours a day. So that's where my head is. So
that's
anyway,
cool.
So speaking of last night's episode, so I want to talk about Snow White.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or
so,
no, she's hated.
Boy, she's destroyed. I mean, she is despondent. She's, like, suicidal. I mean, she wants Regina to off her.
Yeah.
And,
I was shocked about the darkness in her heart.
Yeah.
That didn't even occur to me at all whatsoever. I mean, I figured she would be despondent the way she is. And I love that Charming is trying to, you know, they were all trying to protect her, Regina. Yeah, this is the thing. What I don't get is, Snow is responsible for Cora's death and for orchestrating it and all that. But, I mean, come on. She had such animosity towards her mother for so many years. She even shipped her off to a different realm, for God's sakes. And I get that she's upset that it was Snow that did, but, I mean, why is she so angry and so revengeful?
You know why? I think I know why.
Why?
Well,
okay,
first of all, it's the second time that Snow has...
Well, yeah.
Okay, so but that's beside the point. What I think is that for that brief moment at the end of The Miller's Daughter, Regina finally had her mom back.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
She has never really known her mom that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because her heart, Cora's heart had already been gone when Regina was born. So she's never actually known her mother to have had any sort of love or compassion or emotion of any kind. And now here, for the first time in her entire life, she has her mother. And by the way, Barbara Hershey's grin, even when she's happy, is really scary. Scary smile. She's a great actress, but and when she was a young woman, she was gorgeous. She was just gorgeous.
Oh my God! Having Rose McGowan in that role was just amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's, to me, see, that's the thing, is that Regina had that moment of really, probably her first moment of real happiness.
Right.
Ripped.
Knowing that she would have been enough. Yeah, those last words.
Yeah, and when Cora's last words are, you know, directed at both Regina and possibly and probably at Gold as well.
Mm-hmm.
Saying it would have been enough. What would have been enough? It would have been enough because remember when she ripped her heart out and why she ripped it out was because she wanted to immunize herself against falling in love with Rumpel.
Right.
Well, I think even if she hadn't had that moment of clarity, though, the love would have been enough. It still would have angered Regina this much, because Regina, for as much as she didn't feel her mother's love, she was always going for that approval. And I feel like Regina always thought that someday something she did would be enough to get that approval.
Right.
And to have her ripped out of there takes away that chance.
Right.
You know,
well,
and as much as she hates her, she still loves her and she still seeks to.
Well, and it's her mother. You know, she has the right to do anything she wants because it's her mother.
Right.
No
one
else has the right to do it. You know, it's like when you're in a family and you're in a dysfunctional family, you know, boy, you can be abusive and be miserable and mean and whatever, but God help if somebody from outside the family
mm-hmm.
do something.
Exactly.
They're called dragons, right? So there's kind of an interplay, I think. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. Go ahead, Chrissy.
No, I was just going to say it was just shocking when she showed up at Regina's door. Kill me, kill me. I was like, oh, my God. I just couldn't believe that.
Well, I want to talk for a minute about her conversation with Mr. Gold. I just thought that was just brilliant. You know, I mean, you know, I'm always talking about how brilliant Carlisle is in this role.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And any role, but in this role for sure. And that moment, that very short little speech about, you know, someday, you know, you keep telling yourself, you know, how do you live with it? Knowing the things that you've
right.
done. And his very, you know, kind of philosophical statement, well, you know, you keep telling yourself, you know, enough that it was the right thing to do, and maybe someday you'll believe it.
No, see, yeah. I think that's the wrong approach for Snow to take, because I feel Russell's done that and made that mistake over and over and over
right.
because he keeps convincing himself.
Right, right, and I don't think he does. I don't think he actually does convince himself. I think that is
mm-hmm.
part of his persona that he absolutely hates, that he can't help. And he can't help himself because that's who he is. And any amount of goodness or compassion that comes out is purely by force of will, not
right.
let the darkness take him completely. And his statement that, you know, maybe someday you'll believe it, says much, much more about Rumpel than
mm-hmm.
it does about, you know, what any kind of advice he might give to Snow White. This is a guy that's so full of regret and so full of, you know, self-loathing, you know, which is where Snow White is at this moment. You know, she is where Rumpel maybe was right after.
Initially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, too, yeah, I mean, that's his internal voice. That's what he says to try and get through it and
right.
kind of deal with his regret for whatever, you know, he's done. And so it was interesting to see that Snow was actually the physical manifestation of what Rumpel's been feeling.
Yeah.
And then for him to kind of voice that, I thought that was really interesting as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, really liked that. So were you guys at all surprised? I'm going to jump to another topic. Were you guys at all surprised that Owen is Greg?
Early in the episode, I kind of got the feeling that maybe he would be.
Yeah, the parallel storytelling made it almost too obvious that there had to be that sort of connection.
Well,
and
as soon as Regina latched on, you knew there wasn't going to be a happy ending and something unresolved.
Right. I just loved the fact that, you know, it's like Regina, to me, in this episode, and Lana Parrilla was just so brilliant, I thought,
mm-hmm.
in pulling this
uh-huh.
off, where she's almost as if, you know, and I haven't read it in fiction, but it what I was thinking as she was interacting with Owen and his dad was here's this person who maybe she was a bird or maybe she was a whatever, you know, I'm a bird. And all of a sudden, she's a human. And she doesn't have any idea how to interact on
mm-hmm.
level with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
I agree. Well, yeah, right? I think he was a little creeped out, though, by how she was so fawning over Owen so much.
Yeah.
The bottom mm-hmm. was.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
He was a little creeped out for sure. Yeah. He was like, okay. And then, you know, I mean, yeah. And then, well, we were talking earlier about the fact that he looked so much like Henry. I mean, that was just weird.
Yeah, he looked very much like Henry, which I thought was
so
really interesting. You know, when my first little clue, though, okay, so when Dad gives Owen the lanyard keychain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the Star Wars.
And says it's like a lightsaber. And I'm like, Star Wars. Okay.
Interesting.
So when I
heard I didn't get that connection. I was just like, oh, there they go using the Star Wars again. They must be so happy they got that property.
Well, that was a clue. Yeah, really. But you know what? It's interesting. That brings me back to not my last interview with Jane Espenson, but the interview like that I did that was in print with her a couple months ago, where I had asked her about the Star Wars, you know, the ringtone. And I asked her on the show, and she answered me on the show, and she says, well, you know, maybe. And then when I did it into print, she'd asked me not to put that in the highlights of it because she felt she was giving too much information.
Right.
And so I said that was fine because, you know, I don't, you know, I have no problem with that. If people wanted to hear the entire interview, they could listen to the podcast.
Yeah, they could listen to it. Right.
And she just didn't want that out in print at the time. And then when she was on the show last week, someone actually asked her about that on the show.
Yeah.
And she said, well, no, I mean, it was just, you know, a theme song. She, you know, wasn't talking about it at all. And, of course, it does tie very much in. Right? Because
right.
You know, so tied into last night. It was a very subtle little thing. And I was like a crazy going back saying, okay, 1983, Star Wars lightsaber. Well, the original.
Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, no, it was already, they all three of them were already out. Or was Return of the Jedi, no, Return of the Jedi was before 83, I think.
It was 82, right?
It was 82, right.
I think it was 82, no, you're right. 83, yeah, so 83, everything
was
out.
Later than that. So I was thinking, well, you know, okay, it would have been on and wouldn't have come out in DVD because I didn't have DVDs back then.
No.
They didn't really even have VHS. Yeah, not really. I mean, you know, you could get Beta and VHS.
Yeah. But you had to usually people rented them, I remember.
We got our first VCR in, 1986, we got our first VCR. I convinced my husband to get me a VCR because that was the year our daughter was born. And now you guys know how old I am to have a daughter that old. But that was when you could get tapes of the ultrasound. They're going to give us a tape of the ultrasound, which we still have. So I said to my husband, I said, well, we need to get a VCR so we can watch the tape. And he said, yeah, okay. So it was like, okay, do we get Betamax or do we get VHS? And, of course, the tapes from the obstetrician's office were all in VHS. So we got a VHS. And, of course, that's when then you could go to the rental store. And there weren't very many of them, there weren't a lot of tapes you could get.
Right.
But see, that was the year I ended up taping a lot of soap operas.
Me too. Hello. I was just going to say, yeah, we got ours in 85. I was watching Days of Our Lives. I was taping all the Bo and Hope stuff.
I was doing General Hospital. I was taping General Hospital one night.
Oh, there you go.
You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so back then there weren't VHS. There weren't really people. It wasn't a common thing to have in 1983.
If we had it or not, because I was born in 1983, so.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. I'm definitely older than you.
I think I was part of Regina's curse, just so you know.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I think you were lucky in 83 if you had, like, an Atari.
Yeah.
No, we didn't have that.
Well, ping pong,
oh yeah. Well, we didn't have an Atari. We actually decided to be like really, really like cool. So instead of getting an Atari, we got something from Bally. You know, the pinball
the
machine. So we got like a this was like a very unique little game system called the Bally. And you got like the real Space Invaders. You got real Galaxians, and because Bally had those machines, that's who created those games. So,
oh my god!
So and my husband and I were like addicted. Like we would literally go to a pinball place, and we would play video games like all night long.
Yeah,
sick. I mean, it was really sick. And Ms. Pac-Man, you know, came out around then. So that was kind of
awesome. I love this. I've almost made it to the very end in the arcade game of Ms. Pac-Man. I mean, I was addicted to that.
Yeah, well, I was too. And you could actually, because it was another Bally one, so you could get that. So anyway, so we had this Bally system, but the really cool thing about it was it had a computer.
Oh, cool.
Now, the computer, all right, this was like a really big deal. You could program it in Bally Basic, which was what I had learned in college taking calculus, learned Fortran, and I learned Basic. And it had, okay, get this, huge memory, right? It had a 1K RAM.
Whoa.
Oh, my God, I couldn't fit even a document on that.
He had a 1K.
That's hilarious.
And my husband, who was in school, he was like a bioengineering student. And
yeah.
So he actually programmed this little one pixel, which was huge on our television screen, thing. And he did like a loop, and he got the pixel to go across the screen, and we called him Herkimer the Worm. This is totally with Once Upon a Time. But it's like that's what 1983 was like, guys.
Oh, that's so funny. Jimmy's like, oh, my God.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
oh, that is hilarious.
1983. So that's when Storybrooke came into being. And see, I really feel quite at home there because those guys are all the same age that I was when I was in 1983. Well, actually, I was probably younger because I was in my early 20s, my mid 20s. So,
wow.
So I was younger.
That's so funny.
But yeah. Oh. So anyway, getting back to the story. where were we? Oh yeah, the twist. Okay, so the twist. With Greg, and so what I haven't figured out is his name is Greg Mendel, right? Which there has to be a connection between him and Gregor Mendel. There has to be. Gregor Mendel, the founder of genetics. See, biology major here, guys.
There has to be, though. That I did not catch. Actually.
Okay, wait. Somebody just tweeted me. This is really funny, guys. Somebody just tweeted me, and she must be watching. She must be listening in. And somebody said, cannot believe you are talking about the Bally system. That's what we had. Yay.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, my gosh.
Lydian, thank you, Lydian, for making my day. I thought we were like only people that owned it. It was really expensive. It was like a lot more expensive than the Mattel thing.
Right.
Mattel was like, oh gosh, I can't remember the name of it. But it was Mattel had theirs and Atari had theirs, and the Atari one was really kind of sucky. But
yeah,
like not really.
That's the one we had.
That's the one that had.
We had the crappy one.
Yeah, with Pong.
Oh.
But they were not.
I had an Atari when I was like 5 or 6. It was great.
But none of them were cheap. You know, none of them were really cheap. But I remember that this one was like something like $400. I mean, it was a huge amount of money.
Well, back then, yeah, that was a huge.
You
can buy
a car, right?
Exactly. You could buy a whole house for that much, right?
It was only like 2 years later. I mean, my husband and I we got our system in like, it was like 1981, I think. And by 1983, when we got married, we got our, okay, Lydian, are you ready for this? Our Commodore 64 computer.
Oh my God.
That was
so
83 because we got married in 81 and we bought the Bally before we got married. But yeah, we had a Commodore 64.
Oh, that's so hilarious.
Can you imagine,
it'd be funny, though, to have someone from 1983 planted in 2013 to see how technology is so far advanced. That's crazy.
I mean, that's totally me, right? I'm from 1983.
Then they'd be completely shocked we don't have the flying cars yet, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was waiting for. I mean, I'm a child of the Jetsons.
There you go. We need like a Stargate, though. We need to do that.
Stargate. Well, you know they do, but they have a Stargate in Storybrooke. Those mirrors.
Well,
they have. They even have that shimmery puddle like they do in Stargate.
Oh, you know, recently we just passed the date that Back to the Future 2's future scene took place.
Oh, see? Okay. Yeah.
And we still don't have the flying cars, and there's no Jaws 40 or whatever it was. But we actually hit that date.
Okay, and there's still no Warhol travel. There's still no
Warhol travel. No robot waiters. I'm disappointed.
Yeah, well, haha. True, true. So anyway, we're back to Storybrooke. And by the way, Lydian said, yes, I think we were the only ones that had that system. Did you have the baseball game? Yes, I did. And we had razzle-dazzle football, which was how I learned about the game of football. I don't remember anything else we had on that system. But, okay, so we have Greg Mendel. So I want to know, Gregor Mendel, who was a monk, was the father with his little pea plants. And he was the father of genetics. And anyone who's ever taken biology knows that those little boxes, you know, when you like figure out heterogeneous and homogeneous.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Right.
That was Greg. Those are called Mendel squares.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, those are called Mendel squares. I can't believe I'm remembering this. Happened in biology. All these weird things like Mendel squares, and the chemistry side of my brain always remembers Avogadro's number. 6.023 times 10 to the 23rd, for those of you chemistry people out there. So my brain remembers Mendel squares, and but that's because Gregor Mendel. So Gregor Mendel, Mendel squares, heterogeneous, homogeneous, genetics, all that. How does he connect to Owen, his dad? And his name's not Greg, it's Owen.
It's Owen, right.
So when is Owen, and why does Owen become Greg Mendel?
That's what I want to know.
I wonder.
There has to be some kind of a, I don't know. There's got to be, it's calculated on his part, obviously.
Yeah, because he's assumed that name.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So is his name, maybe was his dad, you know, his dad who is,
right.
Oh, by the way, I said in my article, I think dad is in with, you know, in the cuckoo's nest with Nurse Ratchet.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well, remember, it was in the finale, season one finale, if I recall correctly. There was a name on a plate next to Belle's room, and I need to go back.
Yeah, that was Sydney Glass.
Oh, was that what it was? Because I was thinking maybe it was him.
No.
Okay, because I couldn't remember. I was like, God, I got to go look at that again.
No,
it was Sydney Glass, and then he broke out, and now he's in the world without power. Another portal, and he's in a different world now.
No, wait, he's not in a world without power. He is in a world with power, and he has it.
That's true.
Right? Because Revolution, which is coming back next week, guys.
Oh, well, that's true. Oh, my God, I got it. Gosh, I'm like three episodes behind. I got to watch the last three episodes of the new season.
Revolution is one of those shows. I'm sorry I'm bouncing all over the place tonight, but it's okay.
I know.
It's okay. But this is what this show is for. It's about talking about television.
That's right.
even if it's 1983 television.
What was on in 1983? I can't even remember.
Yeah, okay, I will tell you what we would watch in 1983. Hill Street Blues.
Okay.
Hill Street Blues.
Yes.
St. Elsewhere,
yes.
Dallas.
Was it Cosby was on? Oh, Dallas. Cosby was on, I think.
Dallas, Knott's Landing.
Knott's Landing, yes.
Yeah, we were like grad students. My husband and I were like graduate students. So we would like come home, and he was like working, and he was like whatever, and I was in, and we would come home, and that's what we would do. We would watch TV, and TV was so amazing in 1983.
Oh, yeah.
So we would go from that to hooking up our Commodore 64 to the mainframe computer at the University of Illinois, and we would play Adventure, which was a computer game that you could only play, you know, the word Sziggy. That comes from that game. And
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you're in a twisty little maze. You can go north or south or east or west. Which way do you want to go?
That's so funny.
So anyway, we would go from watching things like St. Elsewhere, and there was another show called Petrocelli about a lawyer who was like a former criminal. There were a lot of great shows. Anyway, enough of that.
Sorry.
We keep getting sidetracked. So I still, I'm like, okay, so how did Owen become Greg?
I don't know. I think it's an intentional thing. I think there's got to be some massive meaning behind it. I think he's going to, that's how he realized where Storybrooke was, because if you remember, when he went to get the police after his dad was taken.
Right.
And he comes back, and they don't see anything. There's nothing there. But then you see Regina and, of course, the Storybrooke side on the other side. I think that he formulated a way in order to uncloak it so that he could, and then when he was in the car accident, and that just kind of happened, and he wasn't expecting that. I think that's how that's what he's been working on this whole time. I mean, you know, if you remember, when they took the father initially, he's like, I'll find you, I'll come back for you, whatever. That's what he probably dedicated to his life.
So I wonder if he, like, altered his own, like, biochemical structure.
Possibly his own molecular structure. He might have done that. That could have been, able to uncloak it somehow.
Gave him ancient genes. Oh, right. No, wrong show. That was Stargate again.
And don't forget that he wasn't working by himself. He's, you know, we've seen the phone ring and everything, so there's somebody else out there.
I don't even know who that is.
It's her. You know, it's the her. You know how his phone says that the caller...
Is it Neil's fiance?
It's her, huh?
It's not Neil's fiance, is it?
It could be. Oh!
Yeah, it just seems like it would tie too much together. That just seems too much, too far.
That's interesting. I wonder if they do know each other. And how does she get into town?
Yeah,
we don't know who she is yet.
No, we don't. You know,
I think she's a fairy. I think she's a fairy. That's who I think.
Yeah, Tamara. I mean, the name Tamara has another Stargate connection, right? I have Stargate on the brain. I don't know why.
She's Tiger Lily.
She could be Tiger Lily. She could very well be. It's possible. I don't know. I mean, the previews for next week look real. Oh, by the way, did you see the Canadian preview for next week's show?
No, I haven't seen it yet. Was it good?
It's all about August.
Yay!
I saw a glimpse of him before I turned off the preview. I can't wait for him to come back. But it looked like he was CGI August. He wasn't human August.
Yeah, but you know what? The Canadian preview is like almost all August.
Really?
Oh, good. Okay.
I was waiting for him to come back, and he needs to stay.
This is going
to
be
stay. And I want to make mention. I mean, a lot of us, we were all so happy that Graham was in this episode because he's so adorable. Oh,
I love Jamie Dornan. I really like Jamie Dornan. They have some really great guys.
The casting news that I'm really afraid of is, now I mentioned this to you on Twitter, Barbara, but Megan Ory, who plays Ruby, has been cast in a new pilot for next fall, and the new pilot's in first position.
Okay.
Oh, no. Maybe we might lose her?
So
no.
I'm thinking that they're going to kill her off or something, because why would Once Upon a Time give her that option to take something else in first position?
You know what? What network is the show is her show on? Do you know?
I don't know.
But it's interesting.
If it's on a different network, then it might be an issue.
Jesse Schramm, who's been on the show a couple times, Cinderella from season one, wasn't killed off. And when I talked to Adam and Eddie in November, I asked them, you know. And they said, we would love to have her on back on the show, but she's, you know, between Last Resort and Falling Skies. Now, Last Resort is an ABC show, and it's no longer on the air, sad to say.
Well, and Falling Skies is summer, so the filming schedule's different.
They're done.
But Ruby's the main character, though. That's where it gets...
But they're filming Falling Skies now. They were filming Falling Skies when I was when I talked to Jesse the last time. They had just started filming, so they're filming concurrently.
Those overlap, yeah.
I just
feel like Ruby's doomed.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think so too.
But they didn't kill off Sydney either. So.
Well, he wasn't the main character either. I mean, those are both, you know, those are minor characters. Ruby may be supporting, but her name's in the opening credits.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what they're going to do with her. I don't know.
I don't think at this point they could do what they've done with Archie and just downgrade him to barely being in it with her while she's balancing another show.
And they could bring back to the foreground. But they could bring back to the foreground one of the other characters, like Archie. I mean, I would like to see Archie.
There has to be a way to bring Graham back. I mean, come on. It's magic.
Well, you know
dead.
But you know what? They're going to be doing – I mean, there's still so much of the Storybrooke story from 1983 to now.
Yeah.
That we don't
know. I was surprised. But the little boy they got to play Owen, because he's a main character in another network show right now.
Who is this?
So I was surprised he had time to do this.
Oh.
Because he's one of the stars of 1600 Penn on NBC.
Is that right?
Yeah. He's the youngest son of the president.
Okay. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a lot of the characters, I mean, you kind of have to, you know, none of the characters are in every single scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's possible to film any character, any of the characters, with the possibility of the real main cast. And even them, they're not, I can't imagine they film 7 days, 6 days a week. I mean, the house cast, I mean, I remember from House, Hugh Laurie was on set from 5:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., 6 days a week.
Right.
And, you know, but on the other hand, Robert Sean Leonard was on set 3 days a week.
Right,
and
I think it depends on the amount of, you know, the amount of script that they have per. I mean, like, it's not only that, but I mean, you know, we haven't seen Red for a while, really.
I mean, it's a few. You know, she's maybe going to be on set a couple days a week. You know, and you, even if you get a character like Rumple, for all of the makeup and costuming that he takes.
Yeah.
Beginning of the season, so the first half of the season, except for a couple of episodes, he didn't have many pages an episode.
Right.
And
so,
now he's in a substantial amount of every episode. And I imagine he will be for the rest of the season. But I can actually, although they're kind of stuck out in Vancouver, so it would be kind of difficult to do something else that isn't shot in Vancouver.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. I mean, but they film an awful lot in Vancouver, so who knows? I mean, you know, getting back to Jesse Schramm, I mean, they film Falling Skies in Vancouver. So theoretically, you know, she could do a couple of scenes in Once Upon a Time. She is freed up to do that. I'll have to ask her.
Well, she's not a main character in Falling Skies, so she's not there all the time.
Exactly. But I can. But my point is that I could even see taking, you know, a character like Rumple. You know, say if Carlisle had an opportunity to do a movie, which this thing with Ewan McGregor is supposed to come out in 2014, which is very exciting. You know, to give him that time. I mean, obviously over summer, but to be able to write around him. Because he's not in every page of every script. I mean, there's nobody that's in the cast that is like analogous to Hugh Laurie in House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all like Robert Sean Leonard, who have their 3 days a week or so.
They could work it out, I think.
I think so. So depending on where she's shooting, I could see bringing Megan Ory back, not killing her off, but sort of, you know, disappearing like, you know, they did with Sydney or, you know, whatever. But I would love to see more of Graham. And I think we are going to see more of Graham. because there is still so much more of the story to tell.
Yeah.
I was thinking in terms of my, it's like my brain is in my novel right now. I jump cut, using cinema terms here. I jumped from 1842 to 2013. And I don't go back to those years between that time, except for a couple of little moments. But that leaves for sequels to the novel.
Right.
Thinking
definitely.
That, you know, all sorts of things to explore in that universe I've created for my immortals and my accidental immortals. But so there's like all this stuff that I can go back to. And I think that's the same, you know, same is true for Once Upon a Time. You go, you know, they've jump cut from 1983 to 2013 in a lot in the narrative. And
right.
Now that all of this time, that, and I didn't get the idea from that, but it just occurred to me that there's a parallel there. But they've got all this time to fill. What happened during all those years? Well, Henry got adopted. Gold, you know, was
right.
What was he doing
what
all those
years?
What
was he doing during that time?
Yeah.
Well, plus,
what, yeah,
what I want to know is that he wasn't, there was no magic. So what was he wasn't practicing being the Dark Wizard.
No, he wasn't the
during
dark.
That
he
time.
Wasn't doing anything. What
so
was
he was
doing?
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah,
what
was his life like? He's sort of this quiet, very calm, extremely reserved, kind of throwback 19th century character. Because I think that's the character that Carlyle's created is a very, very Victorian character.
Yes.
For
that,
Mr. Gold.
Definitely.
Even the way he speaks, you know, and even the and his mannerisms, very and his house. Yeah, he's got a Victorian house.
He is.
Yeah, he's very much a Victorian character. And you know, what was he like? You know, he's out of place even in the odd world of Storybrooke of that time. Everyone else is modern. He's not. Why?
Right. You know what would be interesting? I mean, maybe he was having nightmares during that time and he didn't know, or maybe there has to be some infiltration of the Dark One within this, you know, within that span of time. But what was it? I mean, obviously, he doesn't remember, so, but maybe, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see how they do that.
But part of the curse, if you remember from back in the first season, was to make everybody the unhappy version of themselves. That was Regina's. So what did Regina see? What did Regina want to do with him? Because these are all, you know, they're all Regina's creations.
Right, but
you
she
know?
Was shocked when she walked into the shop and he didn't remember. And she was like,
yeah.
You don't remember? I mean, that was interesting to me, too. That was a very, I think that was a point that we really need to look at because from that point on, knowing that he doesn't remember anything, what did she orchestrate at that point during those years?
Yeah, what what he would be powerless to stop.
Yeah.
You
like,
know?
I'm surprised she didn't kill him there. Like, I'm really surprised by that because he didn't know who he was. So
she doesn't kill unnecessarily, though.
No, she
doesn't.
She
knows more about locking up and controlling than murder.
And, true.
She hasn't killed a lot of people.
And because it's his curse, she would not be served well by killing him. Because what if she, you know, but he just seems so sad, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He just seemed very miserable and sad. And so I want to know more about that. So we're almost out of time. Oh, my gosh.
Man, it goes so quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, even all those tangents we went on.
Yeah,
we did go off on a few of those. Sorry, guys.
Sorry, everyone. We were bringing back the 1983.
I know. And next week, you know, next week will be the last Once Upon a Time for a while, too. So
yeah, don't remind me.
We'll talk Once Upon a Time. I want to talk about Elementary. I want to talk about Game of Thrones next week. Hope you guys will come back and join me on the show.
Oh, sure.
Oh, next Monday night, oh my gosh, we have to change the show from Monday. It's Passover.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yes, you do.
Okay, guys,
if
you're listening, we'll have to do Wednesday.
No, we can't do. Well, we can do it Wednesday.
Oh,
right. My show's on at 10. Well, yeah,
we'll
10
figure
Eastern.
It out. We'll figure it out. I will send something out. But I will do a show next week. It will not be on Monday night or Tuesday night, which are both nights of Passover. So for all of you who celebrate, a happy Passover to you all.
Yes.
And thank you guys for coming on the show. You can catch
sure.
us all at blogcritics.org. And you can catch Jimmy at on Twitter at Jerome Wetzel TV. And you can catch Chrissy at Our Heart Radio. Is that your Twitter name?
Yeah, Our Heart. At Our Heart Radio, yep.
Our Heart Radio. And you can catch me at B_Barnett, all of us at Twitter. So follow us, find us, read us, listen to us. We'll see you sometime next week. It just will be Monday or Tuesday.
Happy Passover.
Right.
Bye. Thanks,
Barbara. Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.